Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the White River and about some ambitious new plans to integrate it more fully into the life of our community or communities. If you want to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests in studio with me today are Emily Mack. She is the director of the Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development, and Brenda Myers, who is the president and chief executive officer of Hamilton County Tourism Incorporated. We're joined by phone by Rhiannon Sinclair, who is with Agency Landscape and Planning. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So let's talk a little bit about what is going on right now, what the White River Vision Plan is. I'll start with Emily on that, but I'd like to have everybody weigh in on it.
Absolutely. So the White River Vision Plan, it is a comprehensive vision plan for both Marion and Hamilton counties. It is a community-driven process, and it's really our opportunity to create a holistic vision and a comprehensive plan for the White River, looking at regional vibrancy, ecological integrity, livability, and economic vitality.
Brenda.
It really is. It's an opportunity for us to talk together about what makes it a great place to live and to visit. Of course, I'm in tourism, but I really am concerned about residents and making sure that they can enjoy this experience. Sometimes we joke about 96th Street being the barrier between the two counties, and this river runs right through those two counties, and there is no barrier.
Rhiannon, how do you plug into this?
I think I couldn't agree more with everything that Emily and Brenda just said, but to add on to they're already really wonderful statements about what this represents to them. For me, it's, you know, it's a chance, a once in a lifetime chance to engage and embrace a shared asset. It's a chance to both keep the region competitive, resilient, and vibrant for future generations.
So, Rhiannon, I'm going to stay with you on this. How is the whole thing going to work? I mean, there is a process going on now. What is part of developing this plan?
That is a great question. So currently we are in phase one of a three-phase process. Within phase one, we're really looking at analyzing existing assets. We've started the public engagement process. It's currently underway both online and through social media, through the hashtag and handle MyWhiteRiver. And it's also, you know, it's a chance for us to really get a good understanding of what's there and opportunities to dig into what we call destinations. Phase two is our envision phase. So that's when we start to get into a bit more detail, get a bit more messy along the river, and find out some of the nuances and some of the real opportunities to make the greatest impact based on all of our findings from that phase one analysis. And then phase three is where we really start to consider what does it mean to make this happen? How do we implement? What does the government structure look like moving forward? So that gives you a kind of brief synopsis of how this master plan process works. And our goal is to really both engage the community in that process to make sure, as Emily said, that this is community driven. And then also to make sure that this is an implementable plan that's both visionary and ambitious, but implementable.
Brenda, this is going to sound like a silly question, but why hasn't this happened before? Because, you know, in some ways, the community perception of and I've lived in Indianapolis for a long time now, and in central Indiana, you know, for an even longer time, and the perception unfortunately, with the White River, has often been that it is more obstacle than asset. You know, is that one of the primary challenges, and why did it take us so long to think about how we are going to make this into something that we all would be proud of?
Emily and I often talk about the people who have preceded this plan, who have for decades, and I'm sure you've had them on this show, the White River Alliance, the Friends of the White River, more lately, Reconnecting Our Waterways and the Pulliam Charitable Trust, which has invested in a lot of these organizations that have just really been, you know, doggedly pursuing the health of the White River. But I think, and Emily can speak more to the Citizens Project, the Citizens Energy Project, and how that ability to create that or to prevent that combined sewer overflow in Marion County from polluting the river. And
yeah,
I think
we just did a show on
I know you did, absolutely. Yeah. And so that it's like this convergence of things. What really precipitated the plan is we've been watching all these organizations do great work. We were really impressed with the Pulliam Charitable Trust for coming forward and supporting the project. We at Hamilton County were in a Vision 2025 plan. Indianapolis was in a 2020 plan. So was Visit Indy. And so it's like all of these things came together at once, would you say, Emily?
Yes.
Yeah, and they really kind of supported our doing this now. And Emily gives you this, you have to hear her impassioned speech about the Kessler Plan and how this is our new Kessler Plan.
Okay, I think that's your cue, Emily.
Well, with that, you know, in Indianapolis, we were incredibly fortunate to have some amazing planners. And everything from John Olmsted at the turn of the 20th century to then George Kessler. And he did Indianapolis's Parks and Boulevard plan in 1908. And at that time, Kessler really envisioned this system of parks, but also connected by our waterways throughout our county and how our water can unite us and bring us together as a community. And so Kessler implemented a good portion of his Parks and Boulevard plan, and that is amazing and wonderful, and it still exists today. You know, we have this incredible, valuable shared asset that runs right through the middle of our two counties. And I really look at this White River Vision Plan as Kessler 2.0. Like, this is our time. And it's almost a century later. But, you know, as Brenda alluded to, that there are numerous groups and organizations that have just been working for decades. And then certainly in Marion County, thanks to Citizens Energy Group with the Dig Indy project, now is our time.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about efforts to improve the White River and make it into a community asset. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named James has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. James, you're on the air.
Hey there.
Hi, how are you?
Great. I listen to your show all the time. Journalism is a tough row to hoe these days.
Well, thank you. Thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Well, I swim in the river every so often, and haven't done it in a while. But my current roommate was going to go swimming, and I said, hey, you might not want to. Last time I got an ear infection. But him and his girl went and did it anyway, and he got an ear infection. I'm just saying, you know, if we cut down these CSOs, maybe that wouldn't happen. And that's my point.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, James.
Sure.
Emily?
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So the Dig Indy CSO project should be complete by 2025, which hopefully will eliminate future ear infections, right? But that project really will clean up the river, and that opened so many doors and so many opportunities to us in both Hamilton and Marion counties.
Yeah, it's difficult. We've done shows on White River before. And, you know, the thing that comes out of it is that this is like it was a forgotten piece of our history, that at one time people boated on the White River. They swam in it pretty frequently, particularly at some of the slower bends. You know, it's almost as if there were right in Broad Ripple, in fact, if I'm not mistaken. When did we begin to lose that, Emily?
That's a great question. And it's interesting when you go back into history and look into that. Honestly, I think we started losing it in the late 1800s. And even well past then, people continued to recreate and enjoy the White River. But in the late 1800s, and I can't remember the exact date off the top of my head, but there was in Indianapolis, there was like a, there was a city resolution that that was where the slaughterhouses needed to dump their offal, was in the White River. There are other records of medical waste and things like that going into the river. And it was literally just seen as a dumping ground. And then, you know, industry grows and industry uses that river. And over time, we just lost it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brenda, you look like you're leaning in.
Well, the first of all, the Clean Water Act, you can't underestimate the impact of that in the 1970s when we started to become aware, obviously, of river cleanliness. And then in the late 1990s, if you'll remember, the Big Fish Kill, I think, brought a lot of attention to the White River. And on 4th of July, 1,000 people entered the river in tubes, 800 in tubes and almost 200 in canoes and kayaks in northern Hamilton County. The city of Noblesville has worked really hard, as, you know, like Indianapolis is doing, in trying to prevent those CSOs. And so there are people recreating and swimming in the river all the time. You know, I watch people wade in that river and swim in that river, and I have some beautiful photographs of that. So I do think that there are parts of the river, and IDEM does some really interesting work on this, and they have a map on their website that you can go to and look at the cleanliness level. And I think we're seeing improvements incrementally and over time. And what we want to do now is really shine a spotlight on this and also communicate eventually that it is clean and safe to go into. And then that creates access. How are we going to make sure people can have access to the river, so that they can feel like they can go down there and get in with their canoe or rent a canoe or swim like they used to do in Broad Ripple?
Absolutely. And it's certainly gotten better.
Much better.
Rhiannon, are there other cities around the country that have sort of turned their backs on their rivers and then had to rediscover them in the way that we're trying to do now?
Absolutely. I mean, I think many cities that have that really experienced industrial revolutions in the same way that Indianapolis did are all victims of that. Those instances where they put the least favorite, the most manufactured industries and uses along the river, and now they have to kind of dig out of those moments. I'm calling now from Boston, where, you know, it's a very similar circumstance. You know, so many industries have bordered the Boston Harbor's edges, and now we're reinvesting in the rivers and creating connected river walks and trying to bring more people back to those public spaces, creating those public spaces. You know, others, I think, that are very near and dear to our firm's heart are also Chicago, where they spent a lot of time trying to refocus on the river, which is at an entirely different level from the city, and provide habitats for fish and for other wildlife in this very urban condition. So it's definitely happening in a lot of places. I think Indianapolis is ahead of the trend in some ways, and it's a great opportunity for us to think critically about how we become more of that exception.
Is Chicago the closest parallel here in the Midwest, or is there another one? And Rhiannon, you've got 35, 40 seconds before we have to go to break. Rhiannon? We seem to have dropped. I'll go to Brenda.
I would say the Scioto River Project in Columbus, Ohio is the other one that's closest to us, John.
So it's the closest parallel. Yeah. If you are just joining us, we are talking about efforts to improve the White River, to make it more accessible to members of the community and to integrate it more fully into the life, not just of Indianapolis, but communities all along the White River. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Emily Mack. She is Director of the Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development. Brenda Myers, President and Chief Executive Officer of Hamilton County Tourism Incorporated. And Rhiannon Sinclair of Agency Landscape and Planning. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today on No Limits about the White River, about efforts that are underway to integrate it more fully into the lives of communities that are on its banks. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on social media. My guests are Emily Mack. She is director of the Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development. Brenda Myers, who is president and chief executive officer of Hamilton County Tourism Incorporated. And Rhiannon Sinclair of Agency Landscape and Planning. Also, if you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Rick has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Rick, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I want to compliment the panel and the city and the big dig. The tunnel is great for cleaning up the water, and it's a tribute to the Clean Water Act. But the question I have is about the water coming into the city. That cleans the water from the city south, but my observation as an active person on the river is it's almost impassable in parts of northern Marion County due to sediment and weeds, which tells me it's getting a nutrient load from up north. And I wonder if the panelists have looked into addressing water quality coming southbound from above us.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much for the call, Rick.
Sorry. Absolutely. I think one of the key factors in looking at the river is looking at the impact of agriculture, which I just want to say that those methods are changing so much to the positive. The ability to micromanage field by field is really allowing farmers to be much more careful about crop treatments. And so looking north, I mean, we obviously have been in conversations with Madison County and Delaware County, which is where the West Fork originates out of. But in Hamilton County, I know I've been spending a lot of time with Ginger at our Soil and Water Conservation Department, and looking at how they are incentivizing and looking to talk to farmers to sort of reduce that algae bloom that is occurring. And obviously, there are so many factors that go into clean water. It's development, it's farming, it's golf courses, and how there are things that you can do to try to help do this. And that's one of the things this plan will address.
Rhiannon, what are some of the planning challenges in terms of dealing with this? Because the thing, when you're talking about a natural feature like this, there are some things that you can't alter. You know, in a perfect world, you might want the river to be a little wider or a little narrower and all of that. You can't really deal with that. It's not like it's a blank slate. So what are the things that you have to work with that create challenges?
That's a great question, John. To build off a little bit of what Brenda was saying as well, the watershed of the Upper White River, it covers 2,720 square miles and crosses 16 counties. So while we do say that the study area is 58 miles within Hamilton County and Marion County, we do look contextually at the entire watershed when we think about things like water quality, when we do flood analysis, and when we understand ecology. So just important to reinforce that while our focus is on these two counties and this 58-mile stretch, we are looking kind of a little bit more holistically at a larger picture as well. But I think, and that, you know, lends into one of those challenges is that the watershed extends beyond the two counties. It's not restricted by jurisdictions. So that's one thing that, you know, we want to make sure that when we think about those that we include in conversations about the changes that we are suggesting or about ways that we can make the river better, that we're inclusive of people outside of the communities, and that we are listening intently to those that are within these areas and that are directly impacted by the decisions that are made. You know, I think I can't emphasize enough that this is a community-driven plan, and I see it less of a challenge and more of an opportunity to engage as many people within these areas as possible. Talking to residents is extremely important, so this plan needs to be driven by those who will benefit from the plan most.
Emily, that I think that's a cue, because we probably ought to talk about the ways that people can participate in the conversation, the ways that they can deliver their input on what they would like to see White River become.
Absolutely. So about 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, we had several public meetings, and we will continue to do that. So throughout the fall and winter and spring, communities can certainly expect more public meetings. However, one of the things that we're also really passionate about with agency landscape and planning and our entire consulting team is not just having public meetings, but also doing some non-traditional forms of engagement and really going to where people are and neighborhoods are and those groups and those organizations. And then also having events and activities on the river in a variety of different ways, again, to solicit their thoughts, their insights, and their input about what they want the future of their river to be. So events, activities, public meetings. Also, we do have a website, mywhiteriver.com. That's a great way to learn the various components of the plan, what's going on, how to get involved. And if people really want to get involved, they can sign up to be a river guide.
So, again, it is mywhiteriver.com. Sadly, people don't drive around with pens in hand when they're listening to the program, so I like to give the URLs at least twice. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the plans to improve access to the White River for the people who live in communities all along it. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Jonah has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jonah, you're on the air.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Hi, my name is Jonah Butler. I'm a future planning student at Ball State, and I just want to say I'm a big fan of the current White River development plan. And what I wanted to ask, or maybe get a couple comments on, was that during my time down at IU, I was involved heavily in community outreach and specifically regarding homelessness rights, mm-hmm. and so forth. And driving up and along the White River, you notice there is a decent bit of non-conventional and, homeless use of the area. And I just want to say, like, when we talk about the White River being able to bridge communities, I think we should also think about ways that this plan could provide for those typically left out of such sort of government and interagency functions, like redeveloping the White River. And furthermore, that the river also provides space for people to express freely their interests and concerns in the city through the use of art, such as spray paint and murals on the walls, which might not be, legally sanctioned, but I think maybe I would like to hear from the commentators on how maybe these concerns would be addressed in the plan, or if there's the potential for these things to be addressed.
Thanks very much also, for the call. Let me deal with that, Jonah, because I've got a full phone bank. I want to try to get to as many listeners as possible. Thank you very much for the call and the questions. I'm going to start with Rhiannon on that one because if I could, I'm going to sort of organize things a little bit and deal with that question about, dealing with communities that are often dispossessed and making sure that there aren't unintended consequences, such as problems of gentrification we see when, urban neighborhoods get redeveloped and suddenly the people who've lived there for generations get chased out. Rhiannon, what steps can we take to avoid those kinds of outcomes?
I think the best way to start is to engage those communities that we know have not been part of those conversations in the best way possible. As Emily said, it's not just about holding populations and having them come to us. It's also about getting out there, boots on the ground, and making sure that they are aware of the project and aware of the scope and aware of the impact that they can make in this process. It's also about having both grass tops and grassroots leaders that represent those occasionally disenfranchised communities like the homeless population along the river that are able to give them a voice and help us to connect to all of the right resources, including for example, one of the members of our task force groups, the Veterans Affairs Hospital, engaging them and including them in those conversations to help us reach those people and understand their needs.
Brenda and Emily, the second piece of Jonah's question was about really making sure that we don't squelch creativity. How do we go about doing that? I'll start with Brenda, but I want to hear Emily's thoughts too.
Well, I think art and this the story of the river and the art and culture of both those neighborhoods that are currently on the river that we absolutely want to make sure that we protect and make those people feel included as part of the process. But no, I think art will be a key factor, and defining how that comes about will be public input. So, I mean, it's not that I don't like graffiti on bridges. Some of it's quite wonderful. But I think if we can provide other venues and outlets for art in which it can be expressed, there are some amazing projects already going on in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If we could sort of somehow incorporate those into the river, I think we will be the better for it.
Emily.
Absolutely. And part of that is also maybe tied in with destination development, right? And so that is a part of this plan, is to look at what are our existing destinations? What are there opportunities for new destinations up and down the river? And what are those ways that we can not only reveal our identity and our history and celebrate that, but also express our identity for both of the regions?
We've gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air. A couple of questions. Says, why does the initiative stop in the downtown Indy area? Why leave out South Indy with no use along the river, despite one of our largest parks being on the river with no connectivity to the rest of Indy? Emily?
It actually doesn't. It incorporates all of Marion County. So it goes from northern Marion County all the way down to southern Marion County to South Westway Park.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the White River and the plans for the future. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, you're on the air.
Yeah, calling from your neighbor to the west over in Terrible Haute. Wanted to let you know that we also are engaged with our river, the Wabash, and try and making efforts to incorporate it into future plans for the city in terms of access and development. On the far side, there's a natural area that's been secured from agricultural properties. It's now wetlands. And on the Terre Haute side, the plans to create access from the downtown and make it a part of our city's landscape. And it's interesting to me because more than 30 years ago, there was a guy named, Jim.
Okay.
I'm going to let you go here because I am just drawing an absolute blank.
Okay.
Jim Burns, excuse me, I'm sorry, very sorry. An associate of Lawrence Hoffman, famous landscape architect who did the Lovejoy Plaza in Portland. At any rate, he was in Terre Haute and 30 years ago was doing a study of four or five cities, among them ours, and was talking then about the virtues of the river and its key in terms of development. And it's interesting to see now, 30 years later, interest not only in our community, but also it's a huge interest in among planners and folks who are encouraging improvement of quality of life in urban areas in particular. So I applaud your efforts and hope there's progress overall.
Thanks very much for the call and the comments.
Okay,
take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. So, Rhiannon, we talked before we went to the break before that Indianapolis is not the only community trying to do this. I know Cincinnati has done a lot of work along its riverfront, and we're beginning to see some of that in Louisville. I know Nashville has done things like this. What's prompted this sort of revival in interest in our waterways, not just as thoroughfares or places to dump things, as apparently was for a long time, but also as integral parts of the community?
We recognize, I think, that it's it's a shared asset. We no longer have the same needs for the types of industries that used to exist along the waterfront. And, you know, I think it's clear in the prices of real estate, typically along waterfronts, that the views of nature and the idea of being close to nature is something that's inherent in many of us. And trying to return to that, I think, is something that is appealing to on a personal level and also for cities and urban areas. You know, I think also retaining and attracting potential institutions and employers and families is another great reason why cities are starting to turn back towards the water, because it's a great shared asset that can provide many different things for many different people.
Emily and Brenda, I'm assuming, given the fact that, Emily, you're the director of the Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development, that there are some economic impact possibilities associated with that. Have there been any studies about what integrating the river into our communities more effectively, more cohesively will do? What kind of development possibilities there are? Start with Emily, but I'd like to hear Brenda's thoughts as well.
That will be a part of this. And certainly I think, you know, we know that there may be some opportunities for economic development up and down the river, and how that might benefit Indianapolis and Marion County and Hamilton County. But I think, you know, something that's important is, while there are certainly those economic benefits, it's also those quality of life benefits, right? And creative placemaking. And I think one of the wonderful things about this plan is that it's 58 miles. And that is really ambitious, and that's very aggressive. But that also gives us the opportunity to not only think about economic development and creative placemaking, but also restoring wetlands, having nature parks and trails and connectivity. I think that it really opens the door for a wide variety of both active and passive recreation up and down the river.
Brenda.
And absolutely. I think that we look at it as economic development in the largest of senses, and that is business attraction, resident attraction, workforce attraction, and visitor attraction. So it's one of the things that we're going to do is drill down to three different nodes in each of the counties for those opportunities. But it could be that it's an enhancement of an existing park that makes it such a great place to live that we feel it will be a business attraction. Or it could be like downtown Noblesville, where there is land available that could perhaps, or in Indianapolis, perhaps could be literally an assessed valuation economic impact. So it really is a broad spectrum when we talk about that.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the plans that are underfoot to figure out new ways to integrate the White River into the lives of our communities, the communities that are along the banks of the White River. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Emily Mack. She is director of the Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development. Brenda Myers, who is president and CEO of Hamilton County Tourism Incorporated. And Rhiannon Sinclair, Agency Landscape and Planning. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today on No Limits about efforts to improve the White River, to make it a more integrated part of the communities along it and make it more of a community jewel. My guests are Emily Mack. She is director of Indianapolis Department of Metropolitan Development. Brenda Myers, who is president and chief executive officer of Hamilton County Tourism Incorporated. And Rhiannon Sinclair, who is with Agency Landscape and Planning. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Aaron has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Aaron, what's on your mind?
Hi. I have lived in Indianapolis for the past 10 years and am a native Hoosier. But before that, I lived out of state. And what I want to know is something that some friends of mine and I have been discussing for a long time is the other things that might not be is in part of this plan that still affect the river, like the littering on the side of the streets. We have noticed that it gets quite bad, especially in Marion County. Is there a way to integrate that into the plan? Because that obviously has a detrimental effect on the White River and the enjoyment of it.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'll start with Emily on that one.
So I think there is a way, and you're right, that is not typically what most people think of, but that is something that's super, super important. So when we think about programming the river and how people utilize it and how they experience it, its appearance, its cleanliness, and, you know, whether that's in the water or on the banks is super important. And so I really appreciate your comments. And so I think that is something that we could incorporate in how we further encourage people to be great stewards of the river.
It is it's a matter of respect, don't you think? And I think one of the, you know, this river gets no respect. And so part of what we have to do as a community is understand that everything we do does impact the river. And Jill from the White River Alliance gives you this great story that I cannot tell nearly as well as she does, but where she talks about every morning when you get up and you shower, the White River is washing you clean. And so we need to really understand that watershed impact and how everything we do, you're right, in this 2,000 plus square mile area makes a difference. Indiana Humanities has done a really great job of that this year with its campfire series, trying to get people to understand the watershed as a whole.
Rhiannon, picking up on Brenda's point that the White River is sort of the Rodney Dangerfield of rivers, are there challenges, and also picking up on Aaron's question, are there challenges that are specific to the White and specific to Indiana that that you have discovered that, you know, are not sort of generic, you know, the city forgot about its river for a while and then rediscovered it? Are there things that are going to be more Indiana focused that are a greater challenge because of location?
I think definitely, just because, you know, Indianapolis is its own very unique, and diverse city. So the perceptions that are rooted in, not approaching the river or thinking that the water is not clean or, that you can't go swimming in it because you'll get an ear infection, which is definitely true now, but has the potential to change in the future, is, you know, I think in some ways very unique to Indianapolis. But I do, you know, I think to take that a step further, there's this level of seasonality that the river experiences that I think is very different from most cities. In the winter, the White River has moments of freezing and moments of being kind of extremely quiet. So if you were to experience it from that perspective and to go tubing along Katiwi Park and be able to be along the river in those moments, you know, it's a very different experience than the river in the spring when you have these flash floods of water moving from the upper watershed down towards the Gulf of Mexico, where it ultimately drains. And then in the summer, when you have periods of drought where the water is at its lowest levels, it's a very different condition in that season than in many other seasons. So I think that there's something to this idea of seasonality that is extremely unique to the White River because it's constantly changing.
How long do we – I'm going to stay with Rhiannon, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on this. How long do we anticipate this process is going to take? And the backdrop on that is that I know that a transformation is possible and that I was born in Cleveland. And I would live there as a boy in the days when the river caught fire. One of the earliest memories I have of seeing a Cleveland Indians game with my father in the old municipal stadium, which was right on the edge of the lake. And just hearing this collective groan when the wind shifted and brought with it a really powerful odor, and hearing the entire crowd just kind of moan at once. Now I go back to see Indians games, and I am shocked when I go along the lake and see people are boating in it, swimming in it, doing all sorts of things that no sane person would have dreamed of doing back then. So how long do we think this will take to achieve this kind of cleanup? Rhiannon, I'll start with you, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts.
Yeah, John, it's hard to tell, but I think, you know, both counties are extremely passionate about changing both the perceptions and the way that people interact with the river. And so I think, you know, it's not something that will happen overnight, but the opportunities that they have in front of them are such that, you know, it's a 20-year plan. It could happen in 20 years, it could happen in 30 years, but it'll be incrementally improved over time, just because we know that the people that live there are passionate about changing that and interacting more with the river.
Brenda.
Well, and I think we've already started. I think both the Indy Project and the Noblesville CSO projects are really trying very hard. I mean, they've already made huge incremental progress. The fish kill, ironically, kind of catapulted some of that cleanliness forward. I mean, I think Delaware County is doing some amazing things, as I understand it, as well. So I know that best agricultural practices is starting to be implemented more and more. And so I think, as Rhiannon said, that we can really get this going faster and rather than later. And I think it is going to be incremental. And I think people are already using the river more than they would have ever even 5 years ago.
We've gotten a fake. Go ahead, Emily. You want to add any?
I was just going to touch on that. You know, the plan itself is a 12-month plan. So this time next year, it's done. And this is not meant to be a plan that sits on a shelf. It is intended to go straight into the implementation process. And we understand that that is going to take years and it's going to take decades. But you have to start somewhere. You know, this is a really big multi-jurisdictional, multi-generational plan. And it is going to be implemented over time, but now is our time, and we're starting.
And I just want to say really quick, John, that it's not just Hamilton County Tourism. I'm just the convener. Mm-hmm. It's Carmel, Noblesville, Fishers. It's even Westfield is even at the table because they're in the watershed. It's all their parks departments and the county. So between that and Marion County, and it's a big group of people that's at this table.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Jean, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Jean writes, I'm a Hamilton County resident, and I am alarmed that no one is considering the role of the river in the natural environment as a wildlife corridor and habitat for birds and animals. Brenda, as the spokesperson for Hamilton County, I'll let you take that one.
Well, you know, one of the great benefits of Hamilton County is that we already have nine public parks and Conner Prairie along the river. So I want to say my last math, and we all know that I'm a humanities major, was something like half of our river is already in public access in Nature Conservancy, like at Strawtown-Katawi Park. And so other than we have about, I would argue, about maybe 10 or 12% in agriculture. That is a huge amount of land already set aside. And all of those parks departments have their own implementation plans, and they're sitting at the table with their plans and matching their plans up to our plans. So we are specifically talking about environment. There's a whole task force and team that's focusing on the environment as part of this program. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the White River and its future. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Tom has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a pediatrician, and I know that, you know, I've admitted far too many kids with respect to drowning or near-drowning incidents, especially along the White River and its tributaries. I was wondering if part of the plan was the removal or modification of those low head dams, which I know have caused a lot of problems in the past and is continuing to cause them.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Should say we've done a show on low head dams, too. Go ahead, Emily.
Thank you, Tom, for calling in today. So one of the things that we're doing in phase one of this plan is studying and understanding and analyzing all the hydrology, water quality, and ecology. And particular to hydrology is understanding our existing flood control infrastructure and the dams and their impact and what that means. And so that work is actually going on right now. And so they, our teams, our engineers are evaluating each and every one of those dams, understanding how they function, why they exist. We're exploring if they are still needed. And if they are, can they be modified? And so that is work that is currently going on right now.
We've gotten an email from our regular listener, Kenny. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Kenny writes, we can clean up the White River or any other one if we have the will and integrity. One, review every linear foot of the river. Two, enforce cease and desist orders for every company, farmer, and municipality that is dumping anything other than purified water into the river. Three, levy civil fines for first offenders and felony punishment for repeat offenders who are polluting. This is not hard. It takes honest intent on the part of our state that is uneasy with environmental justice. For 20,000 years, the rivers, streams, and water tables sustained human and animal life throughout North America with no chemical purification or fancy plans. When Indiana citizens believe that we deserve clean water and we demand that be enforced, that's when it will happen. So, Brenda.
You know, Kenny, I think that's why we're doing this plan. I think it would be wonderful if we could, if Emily and I would be the first cheering, if we could say everyone here can say that everybody believes. But sometimes in order to get people to believe as you do, we have to get them to rally around a clear vision. And I think that's all this plan is trying to do, is to try to get to exactly what you were talking about, that people care so much. And in fact, after our sessions the week before last, I think everybody agreed that we would define this as a success when everybody in central Indiana proudly can tell the story of the White River.
We are talking about the White River today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Bill has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes. How is everyone doing today? Host as well. I would like to ask the question. Are they plan on is the expansion of the canal, is that a part of the river, and are they expanding to expand that along 16th Street and beyond, and also is going to also provide way for more water to go through the Fall Creek area and also for recreational use as for that as well?
Thanks very much for the call and the questions, Bill. Emily.
Thank you for calling in, Bill. At this time, the plan is really focused on the White River. However, we are having discussions with our consultants just about, obviously, right, the other tributaries and the impacts on the river. So the plan right now is to really focus on the White River, but we will certainly take your thoughts and your suggestions into consideration.
We probably ought to talk, because we're getting a little bit close on time here, about the timetable. It's obvious from the listener input and all of that, people have a great deal of interest and concern about the White River. What are the best ways for them to get questions to the people who are working with this plan and or share their thoughts if they wish to?
Well, if you go to mywhiteriver.com, as Emily's mentioned, there's a way to sign up to get alerts and opportunities for people to provide input. And I believe there's a comment section there as well when you submit.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's the and Ree can probably address a little bit more of this because they're the part of the team is community engagement. I think we're doing things. I think both communities are doing things at street level. Like we'll be at a number of farmers markets and fairs and festivals this late summer and fall before the first sort of ideation of the plan is demonstrated. But now is the time to really put that input in, and Ree can answer some of those questions as well.
Okay. Rhiannon, I think that's your cue.
Absolutely. No, I think what Brenda's first response was my first response too. Go to the website, mywhiteriver.com. It will continue to be updated with information about community events where we'll have individuals there that can answer questions or collect feedback
from interested parties. We also have that comment section on the website. It talks a little bit, too, about the timeline and about when engagement will be happening, when those moments of public meetings, if you're interested in joining for those conversations, when those will be happening. But also, you know, I think getting on social media, being present on Facebook and adding your comments there. We're using the hashtag MyWhiteRiver to try to gather all of that feedback and cull it into a repository that we can access as we're, you know, as we're working through the types of recommendations that you all would like to see. So it's, you know, it's a multi-pronged approach to making sure that everyone feels as though they have a voice. I think, too, to Brenda's point, Hamilton County and Indianapolis have been actively engaged with neighborhood associations and with community associations along the river. So if you are actively engaged in those associations or those groups, you might see one of them at those meetings there to talk a little bit about where we are in the process and to get your thoughts and questions.
Emily and Brenda, real quickly, because we've only got about 45 seconds or so, what's been the most interesting thing you've heard in these sort of street-level conversations you've had so far? Emily, I'll let you go first.
Passion and hope.
That there people are really feel a sense of connection then with the White River. Brenda.
And the specific ideas they have as to how we can engage more, that passion and hope is expressed. I mean, they've been thinking about this, and it's really wonderful to hear those thoughts.
What's the best idea you've heard so far, specific idea?
I'm like, some of them are very mechanical. You know, okay. I mean, like, you could prevent this water flow thing if you did that. Well, you know what? I never thought about that. And so some of them are very specific, but mostly it's access. They really want access. And we want to be respectful of those people who own property along the land and, I mean, along the river, but also look for opportunities to increase the public access points that we already have.
That'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Emily Mack, Brenda Myers, and Rhiannon Sinclair for a fascinating conversation about the future of the White River. We will be back on Tuesday with a recorded program. We're going to be talking about the Speed City chapter of Sisters in Crime. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.